In today's conversation, I am speaking with author Sarah Bragg. Sarah lives not too far from me near Chattanooga, Tennessee. And today we kind of veered off topic a little bit for the better to talk about age and how oftentimes women are spoken to as if they are going to become invisible by the time they turn 30 or 35, and why I believe that that is a lie, and how Sarah has navigated the lies that she's believed about losing her sparkle or her shine as she became older, and what she has learned along the way. I really hope that you enjoy this conversation. I feel like it's such a popular topic even amongst my friends. So I pray that you feel a little bit of encouragement today and know that your life is not over when you turn 30. Let's jump into today's conversation. At the end of our days, we want to be proud of how we spent that day. At the end of our lives, we want to be equally proud of the decisions that we've made. To do this, we need to face the hard. We need to talk it out. We need to lean into community, relatability, and understanding. We need to hear how other people got it together, how they overcame the shame, hurt, toxicity, and past trauma, and chose to move forward. But nobody talks about the hard stuff enough. Life is tough and confusing, and yet we try to glide over the struggles like the glaze on a donut and expect to come out unscathed on the other side. We don't deal with the hard. We just keep moving forward, distracting ourselves with scrolling, Netflix binges, and a busy, busy life. But none of us want to feel like we're drowning or settling in the one life that we've been given. And that's where this show comes in. I long to be a piece of the puzzle that not only extends a hand, but comes alongside of you to live well and to live with joy. On the Living Easy podcast, I dig deep and talk about the things that people are not always comfortable discussing. We talk about the nitty-gritty of marriage, from living like roommates to the confusion of sex and intimacy. We talk about the reality of losing friendships and the art of making new ones as an adult, because let's be honest, it is not always easy. And we explore essential life principles like real forgiveness, making perfect memories in imperfect homes, and how to deepen your relationship with God in a way that genuinely changes how you live and how you love. God has used the Living Easy podcast to touch hearts in nearly every country in this world. I started this journey with just a computer on my lap as a nursing mom. And since that point, I've had the incredible privilege of connecting with millions of people worldwide through my platforms and through my online courses, such as The Wife Project, From Roommates to Soulmates. At the heart of it all, it is people who make my world go round. Relationships matter, and how you feel about your life at the end of your life is of great importance. And that is why I pour my heart into connecting with you. People are everything to me, and I share my own stories of my mess, the hardships, and my big mistakes on this podcast, paired with all of the wisdom and the lessons that I have learned along the way to bring you freedom. So let's be friends, click subscribe, grab your favorite warm beverage, and get cozy. I'm Lindsay Maestas. Welcome to the Living Easy Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Living Easy Podcast. This is Lindsay Maestas, and today I am here with author Sarah Bragg. Sarah has authored the book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? An Honest Guide to the Questions That Keep You Up at Night. And we've already been chatting, and she's just the sweetest and so fun. So thank you, Sarah, for being here. I'm so excited to chat.
Oh, thank you for giving me a little slice of the corner of your internet. I really am excited to hang out with you.
Yeah. Well, I am excited to have you here. Okay. So you were just explaining that your oldest is about to start driving. Yeah. So as you kind of look at that, because I have boys who are 6 and 8, okay. So it feels like really far off, yeah. But do you feel like, oh my gosh, where has the time gone? Or do you feel like you've lived it all and you're ready to be in this season? What is it like in, what does it light up in you?
Yes, no, and everything. Yeah. I feel like those elementary years are so long and so good. Mm-hmm. So I can totally remember where I was at 6 and 8. And it felt like high school was just an eternity away, that they would never be old enough to do anything on their own, per se. And then something happens in middle school, and it's like they turn up the dial to lightning speed, and it starts going really fast. And my youngest pointed this out. My youngest is in 8th grade, and she was talking about how fast middle school has gone. And she's like, I don't remember it being like this. It just feels like a dial has gotten turned. So I just went on a college tour with my oldest 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, okay, this is bizarre. Are you sure you're old enough to get to go to college? I don't know what's happening. So it's a really bizarre season. I'm ready for it on so many levels because, and everybody says this, but raising teenagers is harder, is a different kind of hard than little. It was definitely very taxing when they were little, but the emotional like time that it spends with managing teenagers, just your own like worries of are they going to be okay, but just even like, but then their actual like things that they're coming to you, and I don't know how it is with boys, I just have girls, but they talk to us all the time, and it is wonderful, but also sometimes I'm like, can I have my ears need a break, like just for 1 minute, but there's just so much heavier things at this time, and so. But at the same time, on the flip side, they're so funny and they're so fun at this age. Our oldest just makes us laugh all the time. And we can look at some similar things that, you know, would have really been inappropriate probably for them to see. And we can laugh about those kind of things. You know, it's not. Mm-hmm. So it's just as they age, there is a level of fun that is increasing with them. So it's kind of a both and on that.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. Sarah, that makes me think. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it was uncomfortable. But yesterday we have some friends visiting us here, and I'm in Nashville, and we were in downtown Nashville getting dinner and, well, like lunch. We were not down there like late at night, but we had the boys with us.
You weren't on Broadway just like partying it up with the boys.
No, but we were near the area. And so there's a homeless man. And trying to be funny, he has a sign. I hope this is okay to say on my podcast, but he has a sign and it says, saving up for penis enlargement.
Oh, no.
And my youngest saw it. And he said, Mom, that man, and my son is so sensitive and he's so emotional. And he was like, Mom, that man's sign said this. And I was like, oh, okay, we have to navigate this.
Right.
And it was one of those things where it's like, this is very serious to him. But I can imagine as you get older, you're like, oh, my God. Gracious me, yes. You know, and like you can laugh at it. So
my oldest would have totally, even my youngest, like this, they would have totally laughed at that or been like, what? Did you see that? You know, they would have thought it was very funny.
Yeah. Well, but it's so interesting too, because as you bring up like the different hearts, you have the difficulty in the young stage. And I feel for me personally, up to this point, I feel like the newborn 1 year old stage was the most difficult for me. There were a lot of factors like postpartum that I struggled with. But I know that each time we move up a year, it gets more challenging. And I think that there may be a lot of people who struggle with comparison of like, oh my gosh, I'm just starting having babies. And I have these friends who have children in middle school and it feels so much better. And it goes right back to the title of your book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? Okay. Is this person doing better? Did they make a better decision? Are they living an easier life? Yada, yada, yada. So I'm just curious what prompted, because that is such a good title, just even from a marketing perspective, but also just from like a heart tug perspective. How did you come up with that and where did that stem from for you?
Well, you are so right. And just to say this too, I think that newborn early years were the hardest for me too.
Really?
And, you know, that was almost 16 years ago. And nobody, people talked about postpartum depression, but nobody really talked about postpartum anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think I for sure, if I was having a baby now and walking through the same things that I walked through, someone would have said, oh, this is what's going on with you.
Yeah.
This is why this is extremely hard. And would have helped me find help in that time. So I definitely identify with that as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry you went through that.
I know. And I just, you know, it's not fun for anybody. I mean, you're thrust into something you don't know how to do, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody really knows how to handle a baby ever.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait, no, what?
You don't get a guidebook.
Right.
You just are walking into it. Hey, well,
or even worse, you read all the books and then you go, well, this isn't working. Like I read chapters 7 through 9 and she's not doing what the chapter said she would do. You know,
that's true.
And so it's just so hard. And for this book, you know, it really sort of was coming out of the last few years for me. And 2020, I think for many people, turned things upside down. And I had lived in Atlanta, I mean, most of my adult life. And I'm in my mid-40s right now. And I never imagined leaving. And then 2020, we just like literally just let's turn our lives upside down and move back to my hometown, which is outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh,
and yeah. So we're like practically neighbors.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, as good as it was, we were moving on to property. We bought property next door to my parents' property, like all these things, as good as so much of that was, it also was just a lot of hard. And I can remember, my first book, which is A Mother's Guide to Raising Herself, had just come out. Like we moved, that book came out, and I just was feeling at a place of burnout, of overwhelm and tired and lonely, and helping my kids go to, you know, transition to middle school. What a terrible time to move, and going, why did we do this? What were we thinking? And I can remember people asking me like, oh, are you just so happy to be home? Are you just so happy to be in that house? Are you just so happy? And I just remember going, yes. But like everything in me was screaming, no, like, I don't want to be here. I'm not happy, but I feel bad that I'm not happy. I don't know why I'm not happy. And I'm looking around and everybody's going, yeah, but you should be happy. Like this is, you know, and so I just really started digging into those feelings and wondering why I don't feel happy and what does happiness actually look like for me? And that's really sort of birthed the book, because in that season, I'm asking that question, is everyone happier than me? But then I was also asking a lot of other questions that were sort of related to happiness. Like, does anybody like me? Do I matter? Mm-hmm. You know, why have I lost my sparkle? Am I invisible? Like mm-hmm. all these questions were coming up for me. And so that's where I wanted to write the book about the questions that we ask, and that you're not the only one wondering these things, that I'm wondering these things. And it's not, it's just like those parenting books. It's not a, here's exactly how to do this thing in order to get this result. But it's a, hey, here's what I'm doing that I'm working on to try to find happiness and peace and connection in mm-hmm. this season of life. And so maybe it will help you too. And so that's really where that sort of this idea came from for this book.
I love that. You have the cutest accent, by the way. I love listening to you talk.
I love it.
But yeah, it's powerful because, and I wasn't even planning on going in this direction, but I feel like God has just placed it on my heart to talk about that concept that you mentioned, Sarah, of feeling invisible. And I think so much of that comes from the way that society speaks to women about their age, especially. I am 34 and I feel like I grew up from 20 to 29, just constantly hearing when you turn 30, you become invisible and it's such a jarring concept because for me, I feel like my life is just starting. I feel like there are so many opportunities and I like my kids are a little bit older. And so there are freedoms that I have and I don't feel invisible at all, but there's this, even my younger family, they give me a really hard time for my age because they're younger mm-hmm. than me, like my sister-in-law. And I noticed that she has this rhetoric around being 30 that terrifies her. Mm-hmm. And I just would love for you to speak to that, kind of how you perceive that. Do you think that the world is maybe changing its tone a little bit now that people are looking different when they turn 50, like you see J-Lo at 50, or you see these women who are coming into themselves and they're wise and they're living their lives and they're mentoring and pouring into other women. Can you speak to that idea of feeling like, oh my gosh, when I turn 30 or 35, I'm going to become invisible? Yeah.
Oh, I have felt that in different seasons, you know, and I can remember turning 30. I felt like a high, like, you know, people said, like, if you could ever go back to 1 year of your life, like, what would it be? I want to be 27 forever. I loved 27. And then I think I could probably do 37. I think something about the sevens, I guess. But, you know, 27 was just such a great professional year. I got married that year, you know, like the best shape of my life that year, you know, all the things that you're just feeling good. And then I turned 30. And I don't remember as much hearing the rhetoric that you're going to be invisible at 30. But I just remember there was another shift of changes that happened to me at 30 that really sort of rocked me, that made me feel invisible. And that was, I had a professional rejection, where, you know, I was dismissed from a certain project I was working on at the same time that I had my first child. And so that was some really big shifts, and to go, gosh, I've been like super great at everything I've done. And then I had this baby and I'm not good anymore. Like, you know, like I'm not great at this. I'm like, she's like crying all the time. So to me, that was like the measurement of like success. I know more now, but for who I was then, that felt like I was not successful in my career or in motherhood. And so that really rocked me for a few years, really. And then I feel like turning 40 was probably the next, you know, that milestone that you look at. And 40 didn't necessarily scare me. Like I was kind of like determined to like look a certain way by 40. Cause I felt like, gosh, if you can look this way by 40, I bet you're going to be okay. Like that has to be what keeps you okay. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my husband will give me a hard time if I don't say this. He's like, how many times did you say, well, I might as well be 60, I'm turning 40. Like, he's like, how much life did you live between 20 and 40? Like that's 20 years. Like that still is a long time. And for some reason it felt like it was over. Like I might as well be 60, which if, you know, if I was psychoanalyzing it, I'm probably feeling like, yeah, 60, you're done. Like you have no more importance, which is so silly and so crazy. But for me, probably turning 42 was really the biggest, hey, I think I'm invisible. Like, of, you know, you're no longer walking that, not that I'm looking for like people to make comments on my attractiveness, but you know, as a female and you've been conditioned in the world that we live in to gain that sort of worth or value. And from that sort of thing, and like, I don't know that anybody knows that I exist. Like, hello, I'm walking down the street. Anybody, you know, you start feeling like you're just sort of looked over, or all the people who are crushing it on social media in these sort of platforms are all young, and you're going, oh man, that was one, like, I guess my time is done. Like you just, it automatically feeds that feeling. In fact, there's like a study that showed that nearly 70% of women in midlife feel invisible. I mean, that's a pretty significant number. So I definitely feel like you're not alone if you're feeling invisible as you're hitting these certain milestones of age. You're not alone. That is definitely something that I think we are all feeling in different ways and in different seasons. And that is sort of that prompt. I joked that chapter of that book should have been titled, you know, that I lose my sparkle. Like you just wonder, am I still there? Is it still me? I feel like we've become a middle schooler all over again and asking,
insecurities, like, and
so many insecurities. So I definitely feel like we get thrust back into that feeling of invisible all over again, just like middle school.
How do you navigate it? Like, I know your husband, I love to hear that he kind of jokes around with you about it, because I do feel like the lightheartedness surrounding it is so sweet, and to be able to do life with someone, to get older with someone, and is also such a blessing and a joy. What are some other ways? And I've never talked about this on my podcast before, but I have this conversation in real life so often. I'm like, well, this is a really good opportunity. How do you fight the lies that you believe of I'm invisible, knowing like you have value, you have worth, you've been given gifts, and your gift alone, Sarah, just of your book and pouring into other women, whether older or younger than you, stems from the experience and the wisdom that you've gained along the way that you wouldn't have now if it were 20 years ago. So how do you fight those lies? And maybe how would you encourage others who feel like, oh my gosh, I'm getting older. Where is my life going? What am I doing?
Well, I think even what you just did is sort of an example of it, is sort of fact checking. Mm-hmm. It's listening to the story that you're telling yourself and then fact checking it. And that sometimes comes in the form of your connectedness with a friend, like reaching out to a friend who knows you. So just you saying that to me and saying, yeah, but like, look at what has come from you being at 45, which also, side note, I thought I was turning 45 this year. I'm already 45. Just realized that today. So here we are.
Just my husband and I do that a lot too.
Yeah. So that fact checking of looking at a friend and the friend saying, look at what you've done, look at where you are. I think that is a really helpful piece, because you have to sort of, first of all, speak that story out loud that you're telling yourself, that I'm invisible, that I don't matter, that no one sees me, that I have nothing left to offer. And then fact check it with someone that is trusted. So whether that's a friend or a therapist or, you know, some way to get it out of your head and then someone to help you fact check that, or for you to just be able to have ways to look back. Like I love looking back in my journal and looking at things that I've read or thought through or already processed and going, oh yeah, this is true. This is true. Mm-hmm. I think that that is probably the first best line of defense is that what is the story I'm telling myself? And then fact checking what you're thinking in that moment.
That's really good. That's wise. I also feel that with technology and with the way that the world is going, we have so much opportunity to use our voice. And there is some freedom for me in while I do still feel young. Like I still think 60 is young personally. I'm like, I see my mom and she's like thriving and we're traveling and like she's living her best life. And I feel that so much of it is what we believe. It's our perspective. Yes. And we can choose to think, my life is in shambles. I don't even know who I've become. I don't know who I am or what I want in my life. And I'm already 30. Or we can look at it and shift that perspective and say, oh my gosh, what's to come? Yeah. How exciting that I have another, hopefully, Lord willing, God-given 30 years that I get to live again. Yes. And I often think of successful people, and this is kind of just because I'm a businesswoman and I think this way, and this may not be how everybody thinks, but that there are a lot of people who started late. I believe Vera Wang started designing dresses in her 40s.
Absolutely.
And Julia Child didn't start her cooking career until the late 30s, I think. And then she didn't get on TV until her 50s. And there's so many actors. I think Morgan Freeman started acting at 50. So it's this belief system that, and maybe I'm just getting fed all of this from like TikTok and social media that I need to not consume, where they're like, oh my gosh, you're 30. I don't want to turn 30. And it's a beautiful gift. So if I could just encourage everyone, exactly what you said, Sarah, that like fact checking your life and seeing the goodness and the gifts that you've received, and also seeing, oh my gosh, there's so much potential for more. There's so much opportunity. And a lot of that just takes action from us to say, what do I want? And am I going to chase after this? But to speak to, kind of going backwards, that woman, Sarah, who is like, what have I done with my life? So maybe they are 35 and they're not feeling proud and they're not feeling like I've achieved it. And they're looking over the fence at their neighbor and they are wondering, what have I done to my children? I was not in a healthy place. Is my family going to be okay? What would you speak to them in that if they're feeling like, I want the next 30 years to be so much better than my last 30?
Yeah, I think there's always, is that, you know, I don't know if this is the right phrase, but it's that growth mindset of towards your life. You know, I don't think I ever encountered a growth mindset instruction. Like the schooling I went to, it was always like, you got the test you took, the grade you got is the grade you got. Like there was no like, did you actually learn? Let's give you an opportunity to retry and see what you like improved on. And I think that that's what comes to mind as you were talking, is going, we can have a growth mindset towards ourselves, that whatever we have done, it doesn't have to define our future. It doesn't have to define what's next for us. We can always grow. We can always improve. We can always be better. You know, it's kind of like, and then at the same time, offering yourself grace for what you knew when you knew it, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes your best self at that time was genuinely your best self at that time. And we can have grace towards ourselves. And I think one of the things is I keep thinking about, you know, you matter. That's at the end of the day, you matter. And we live in a culture that is very much geared towards achievement and efficiency and productivity. And I love all of those things. I'm an Enneagram 3. If you're an Enneagram person, I just want to achieve and I want to do well and I want to get there fastest and first. And so I am very wired towards that. And I've done a lot of work in the last few years of redefining that and going, at the end of the day, my purpose is, it can be so small. And so for the woman who feels like I haven't done enough and I haven't achieved enough, or my family is this, or just go, you know what, like, let's calm down and take a breath and go, how do I matter today? You know, we had horses on our property for a couple of years when we moved here. And during that season where I was really low and I was really struggling and really burnt out and feeling like, well, I'm not accomplishing anything. Like I am not doing anything. I realized when I started redefining that, you know, me walking around our property and kicking poop, because apparently I didn't know that you got to do that if you have horses. You got to like spread the poop out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I learned a lot in that season about horses that I did not know. But I was like, that was purpose. I mattered in that way. If you needed someone to kick the poop, that was me. And you know what? That showed that I mattered on this earth in this small little way that, that I mattered. And I think that if we can start to really look at even the small things in our life, you know, putting the dishes away, or I make the coffee. And, you know, that was like, okay, I clearly matter, because if we were not caffeinated, we would not be kind. So me making the coffee is like a way of mattering. And I think remembering there's a lot of small ways that you matter, and your family wouldn't function well, or your work and what you do wouldn't function well, by the small things that you contribute and the small things that you do, that there is still hope to start changing your perspective and having that growth mindset of going, oh, look at how I matter. And I think when you start seeing that, it starts to, I don't know, infuse a little bit of excitement into your life and going, okay, this is good. Like I am mattering. Me being here matters. I think that's a really good shift that we can make, is knowing that we matter and having that growth mindset that it's not too late to like improve and to do better. And that it's okay that if we did our best was our best in the past, it's okay.
Yeah, that's really good. Thanks, Sarah. That's really helpful. I'm curious, in your opinion, as your children have grown older and you kind of look back at your life and as a mother, as a wife, as a friend, what are, if you had to choose like three things that you would go back and maybe change or alter, or just that you've learned through the process where you are now?
Yeah. I think I would start therapy sooner. I think that, I sort of grew up in a way that therapy was sort of dismissed. And so I naturally just didn't go in that direction. But I think there's things that probably would have been helpful for me to process through, especially before having kids or when my kids were young. Sort of like me saying about the postpartum anxiety, gosh, that would have been so helpful to have someone helping me through that time. So I think that is something that I've learned, that seeking help earlier would have been good. I think when it comes to my kids and raising kids, I think taking a more gentle approach. We started really more of a gentle parenting when my girls were probably like 3 and 5. So they're still young when I really started redefining what that looked like for us, my husband included. But I wish that I would have, I don't know, understood that even more. I just was in, again, this kind of goes back to what I was saying. You did the best that you could with the knowledge that you had at the time. And so where I was in my season of life, no one was talking about that. So I can give myself a lot of grace with that. But I do think that was one of those things. And then probably just, again, like noticing the good, like being able to really practice. I just journaled about this yesterday. Noticing the good, not only in myself, but in my girls, like constantly like calling out the good in them, even if it's on something like so small, so seemingly insignificant, but just calling attention to it. Because again, I am wired for efficiency and let's get this done the best way like possible. And sometimes that can overflow into relationships, and I can value efficiency over connection. I wish I had done this even more, but noticing the good and calling it out, just even on like little tiny small things, in them earlier. I wish I had started that and did more of it. I wish it's like retraining your brain really when you're not someone who's like constantly noticing the good. It takes a lot of rewiring that you have to do.
Yeah. And as you come out of that season of life and into this season of life, do you feel maybe just in a way of giving hope to those who feel like, oh my gosh, I've failed in this and this and this. Like, do you feel like there are moments of redemption? And do you feel like there are moments of, okay, maybe I didn't do this perfectly. Maybe my anxiety prevented me from loving my kids in the best way during that season. But now,
yeah,
is that something that you feel and experience currently?
Absolutely. I think that is one of the great hopes of your kids getting a little bit older. Because I think as you evolve as a person and you grow as a person and you change and you're doing better or trying better, you know, I would always fear that. Because again, my oldest probably faced the brunt of so much of it because she was the first and I'm trying everything on her, right? Because I've never done this before. But I learned early on to start to apologize when you need to apologize, to apologize. Yeah. And like even so, just to give an example of that gentle parenting, I remember we spanked her when she was really young. And I can remember, again, we stopped when she was probably about five. Mm-hmm. And I can remember we were driving in the car. She must've been about 10 or 11. And I just said, I said, did you feel loved when I spanked you when you were young? And she thought about it for a second. She said, no. And I said, I am so sorry. I said, I thought I was communicating that I was doing this because I loved you, but I know now that you didn't feel loved and that did not communicate that. And I'm so sorry that I did that. Yeah. And that was it. You know, it was like she accepted, like, it was not like she was, you know, it wasn't this grand thing, but that practice of apologizing, it really has shown me now that she's about 16 and we have this relationship with her that I can remember thinking, gosh, will we have a relationship with her? Is she just going to hate us? Is she going to be, you know, resentful of us? Like all those worries.
Yeah.
And realizing that that is that power of redemption. When you are doing your best and you're making that effort and then you're coming and, hey, I messed up here. You're owning the parts that you need to own with them. There really still is time for relationship to build and to grow and to flourish. And that to me, I see glimpses of that. I mean, she still hates me a lot because of like, we still have so much technology limits and she hates that. So maybe one day she'll still love us for that. But I do feel like the redemption it will come. And it is one of those long games that you play.
It's really good. Well, thanks, Sarah. I've loved gleaning from your wisdom and just having the opportunity to read through your book. It's been very impactful for me and kind of eye-opening in the way that I perceive the things, my circumstances, the way that I perceive other people, and just gives me an opportunity to more intentionally self-evaluate. So I would just ask, and I always ask my authors this, if you had to choose one thing that you hope my audience gains from your book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me, what would that be?
I hope that they would gain a sense of feeling at ease in this, in the way that, oh, like she gets it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not the only one that you can take that deep breath to go, okay, like she sees me. She's like this. I'm not the only one. And this isn't the end of the road. That's what I would hope that they take away from the book.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here. It was so nice having you.
Thank you for having me. And maybe we'll get to hang out in Nashville sometime.
That would be really fun. I've been up to Chattanooga one time and I absolutely loved it. So I only had taken my boys that day because my husband was working, but I'm trying to get him to go with me. So we will.
Oh, it's such a good place to bring your family. Like there's so much fun to do in Chattanooga.
It's very cute. So, but thank you so much. And for our listeners, if you enjoyed this conversation, as always, please be sure to share with a friend or family member, somebody who needs a little encouragement, a little bit of heart work, or some hope that whatever season that they're in, that likely it is likely that not everyone is happier than them, but also that so much mm-hmm. is how we perceive and live and choose each day. So I will link the episode, or I will link the book in my show notes, Is Everyone Happier Than Me by Sarah Bragg. And we love to hear your feedback. So be sure to share on social, send me a DM, let me know what you thought of this episode, and be sure to tag us so that we're able to see that content. Thank you so much again, Sarah, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.